This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. We are continuing along with the divisional previews. We're finishing off with the Pacific Division, which I think it's going to be one of the most interesting divisions in the league because you've got the extreme of extremes at the bottom and at the top of this division. But first, how's it going, guys?
Going pretty well.
What's new?
Not much. Let's get going.
Jeez, all business. So hurtful.
Everything's great.
All right. That's it, eh? Okay. Yep. Fine.
How are you, Matt? How's things going with you?
All right. The kid's good. She's learning to talk.
You're in Chicago this weekend. Tell us a little bit about your visit with Jonathan Toews this weekend.
You just gave a spoiler. It's something to do with an upcoming issue that may or may not involve Mr. Toews. So spoiler alert by Ken there. But yeah, it was fun. It went well. And the readers will soon learn what the purpose of that trip was.
Excellent.
It's an exciting project. Yep. You'll find out about it in about a month or so, people who read the hockey news. People who listen to the hockey news, let's continue, or let's start.
All right.
With the bottom of the Pacific, and I think it's pretty clear who it's going to be based on their strategy in the expansion draft, which I believe was to tank, the Vegas Golden Knights. And I guess, first of all, is this a team, I mean, their Twitter account says no, but is this a team to be taken seriously, or is that not even the point of this season for Vegas?
Oh, I think you have to take them seriously, for sure. I mean, you have to take anyone in the NHL seriously. There's no guaranteed win nights anymore in the NHL, and I think with Vegas, regardless of who they trot out there, and regardless of who's there after the trade deadline, because I think this team's going to look a lot different after the trade deadline than it does before the trade deadline. But what you're going to have is you're going to have a bunch of guys who work really hard and who are trying to prove something and, you know, are established, you know, NHL players or pro players who know, you know, it's not been their first rodeo. And I mean, they're going to have fairly good goaltending. They've got a decent defense core. They've got just a bunch of good, decent sort of second to third line guys. And I think they're going to work their asses off, and they're probably going to try to catch a lot of teams off guard. And I think a lot of teams will really have to be wary of, you know, taking these guys too lightly.
Yeah, I think the key for Vegas is going to be Marc-Andre Fleury is going to steal you some games. You know, I don't know if it's crazy to say he'll have at least like 5 shutouts this year, but I think he's going to win some games on his own some nights. Not that he has to, but it's a nice luxury for them to have. And, you know, as Ken said, the roster's going to look radically different after the trade deadline. But, you know, I look at a player like Jonathan Marchessault, and here's a guy who's already proven that he can score in the NHL. Now he's going to be getting great minutes. He's going to be getting great power play time. And I think he'll be, you know, one of those players who has the right attitude coming in where he's going to make the most of the situation. I would think the same of Riley Smith, a player that has been overlooked several times and sort of cast off of teams when he was playing pretty well.
Yeah.
And then you look and you say, like, okay, well, James Neal is probably not going to be there after the deadline, but they're going to get some future assets for him. The other interesting thing, too, is Shea Theodore. He might be one of their best defensemen. They might have to send him to the AHL to start the year just because he's waiver eligible. They've got that huge glut of NHL defensemen right now, so they'll have to sort that out. But once they do, I think you're going to see a team that's competitive every night, and maybe they lose a lot of 2-1, 3-2 games just because they don't have that established number one center in the NHL. But I don't think they're going to be like, you know, Ottawa Senators bad or Washington Capitals
bad. No. I mean, I look at their defense, nay, their roster. And I look at that defense core and they're better than a bunch of teams on the blue line already in the
NHL, the Devils.
I think there's a couple of teams that are better on there. And I look at their roster and I don't think this is the 31st place team in the NHL. I really don't.
I'm going to disagree with you guys.
Oh, wow.
Which is more fun. I'm glad that I do.
Fair enough.
You know, and it's no disrespect to Vegas. It says, I don't think that their plan was to be good. I think the plan was to tank. And they made so many side deals. They've secured so many picks. They're going to secure so many more when they flip guys. Like, you know, James Neal maybe can net you a second rounder, a first rounder at the deadline. They passed up on a lot of good players. And they stock the roster with a lot of guys who are sort of fringe, you know, the Teemu Pulkkinens of the world, quad A type of players. And yes, they got a deep defense core, but they've got a deep defense core that consists of guys who would be third pairing on most teams. And you're in the Pacific Division, you're going to be going up against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Getzlaf, Ricard Raquel, Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and your top pairing might be, you know, Braden McNabb, Jason Garrison, guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be very overmatched. I think they're going to have a really hard time scoring. And I think they're secretly totally okay with that. I think their plan model, whether it's a smart move or not, is they looked at Edmonton, Toronto, and thought, hey, these guys are looking really good, and they had years of picking really high in the draft. The problem is, of course, an Austin Matthews and McDavid, they don't come along every year. But I still think Vegas is planning to build through the draft, and they want to be deliberately awful. That's my theory, just based on what they did over the summer.
Yeah, I think you're right about them, you know, a lot of the moves that they made being curious ones, and that they don't mind being at the bottom of the league, and I think that's definitely the case. But I just, you know, awful and putrid and terrible. I'm not sure they're that bad.
Like, so you don't think they're going to be like Colorado last year? I think they could be as bad as Colorado last year.
I think Colorado's worse.
I think they could beat Colorado this year.
Let's
get some bets going.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think they could finish like 27, 28.
Yeah, I
think that's where they're going to finish.
I actually thought that they might beat Vancouver in the division because I see the Golden Knights caring a lot more than the Canucks over the course of a season. Like, I see, you know, Vancouver's got some really nice up-and-coming players, but they also have a lot of guys where they seem like placeholders. So I just feel like there might be a little more, like, oomph to Vegas than Vancouver. So I think at worst, Vegas is, like, the 28th team overall. I think they're probably the best worst team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Again, I still think it's generous, but fair enough. I'm glad you mentioned the Canucks, Ryan. It's a good transition to our number 7 team, which is the Canucks. And they're the team that's sort of been stuck in that denial, are we rebuilding, are we not, limbo for a few years. It seems like now they're infusing that lineup with more youth, and they're closer to accepting, except they also go out and they sign a veteran like Sam Gagne, and the Sedins are still in the lineup. So they still look to me like a team that's going to limp along and just, you know, they're not as talent-rich as others, and I think they're a few years away from developing into a contender once their young guys, you know, make the team, the Ollie Ualivis of the world. So to me, it's kind of just a year where the Canucks have to just kind of take it. They're going to lose a fair amount of games, I can only assume. Maybe they're a 35-win team. Do you guys see any glimmer of hope this year? Am I wrong?
I don't see much hope in this squad, and they're at such a weird place because, like, Ole Ualevi has been struggling lately, and that's fine. Like, they don't need him to step right into the NHL. But, you know, you have positives like Brock Besser, but then you have these weird things coming out of Vancouver where people are saying, like, oh, maybe Besser will get sent to the AHL because they have Vanek, and, you know, they brought in Burmistroff, and maybe Reed Boucher is ahead of him, and it's like, no, why are you going to do that? Like, I understand bringing in, like, placeholder players, but you also have to give the elite young talent that you're bringing up the minutes so that they can succeed. I mean, this happened last year, too. Troy Stetcher doesn't play for the Canucks unless they get into injury problems early on, and he was one of their best defensemen last year.
And Besser had 4 goals in 9 games to end
the year. But they had tons of injuries on defense last year, too, to be fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
But their intent was for Stetcher to play in Utica. They basically brought him up because they had to, and that worries me about Canucks management, is that they're not quite seeing the big picture here, or it doesn't seem like that, you know, from an outsider's eye. And, you know, you look at the goaltending, is Jacob Markstrom a number one goalie in the NHL?
I think we know by now. He's a good backup.
Yeah.
But he's being paid starter money.
Yeah, exactly. And then you look at the defense core, and they have some nice defensemen. But it kind of feels like, is Chris Tanev still going to be in Vancouver by the deadline? Probably not.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's going to be a couple of things here that'll be really interesting to watch in Vancouver. One of them is going to be the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Travis Green, identified as an up-and-comer, identified as a really good coach who works well with players. You know, he's not going to want to come in and start failing right off the get-go, you know? I mean, he's going to want to make his mark on this team. He's going to want to be that guy that everybody, when they're voting for the Adams Trophy, goes, oh, yeah, you know, he came in and he made this team a playoff team, and now he gets the Jack Adams Trophy because of it and gets fired in a year or two. And the other is the goaltending. I mean, neither of these guys has played starter games ever. You know, they're both just big, tall, good-looking Swedish guys.
Yeah. And they're just keeping it warm for Thatcher Demko. That's the long-term plan. Yeah, it's the interesting thing to me, and I've said this a lot on various Canucks radio shows, so I feel like a broken record in my own head, but with Chris Tanev, I don't know if trading him is the smartest move, because I think he's only 27 the last time I checked, and if you trade away a Chris Tanev, guess what you need? A Chris Tanev. You start looking for a Chris Tanev.
But again, it depends on what your intentions are.
I mean, yeah. But in three, like, how the Canucks could be good in 3 years. And he'll be only 30. He'll still be, look at Mark Giordano in Calgary is my example. He's 33, 34 now, and they've kept him. They kept him through some lean years, and all of a sudden, now they're good. And they're like, oh, glad we kept Mark Giordano around because he's this veteran leader who can play with Dougie Hamilton.
Right.
So I see Chris Tanev actually having a role down the road if they decide not to.
And he's a younger 27 because he doesn't have like tons of NHL miles on him already.
Not
right?
A lot of playoff mileage. Hey-o.
No, yeah, no, but I mean, he came into the league late. He was a late bloomer.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot of those, sort of long playoff run NHL type miles on him. So yeah. you might be right.
And he was NCAA, so
right.
his workload in college was only 35 games tops.
Right,
anyways.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very true. At number six, and this is another one, it's funny, the Pacific seems to be the division that incites the most debates, but I know I've had a lot of debates in the office. Arizona is the team we have number six. I personally would rather see them number five, because to me, any criticism about the Coyotes, you're criticizing a team that doesn't exist anymore. They changed so much of their roster. This is a new franchise, essentially. You've got Chalmerson added to the blue line. You've got Demers added to the blue line. Clayton Keller is probably in the lineup. Derek Steppens at center. Antti Ranta's in net. It's a different team. So I personally think it's fair to be optimistic, not about a playoff spot, but about improvement for the Coyotes.
Well, they have to. I think this is a team that desperately needs to show something this year. Whether it's, again, and as you say, making the playoffs, I think that's a bit of a pipe dream because I think five central teams have a good chance of making the playoffs and only three from the Pacific. So if they're finishing four, five, or six, that leaves them out of the picture. So we'll assume they're not going to make the playoffs this year, but come on! Come on! Show us something!
Right.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean they've got to make a step this year. They've got to make some progress. They've got to show us that they are on the cusp of doing something special. And this is a group that, with another year, with Max Domi having another year and Jacob Chychrun when he gets back from his injury that he had this summer, working out and jumping off of chairs and stuff like that, it'll be an interesting team to watch. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like the offseason moves they made. Like, I think Antti Raanta is probably a little underrated at this point. Derek Stepan, I think he might not be that traditional big-time number one center, but he's so responsible. He's such a good two-way player that because there's going to be so many young elite skill guys brought onto this lineup that a player like Stepan becomes very valuable because he can be that anchor in a positive sense where you can let a Domi or a Keller or an Anthony Duclair just fly and you know that you're covered because Stepan's going to make sure that all the important work is done out there. And looking at that blue line, I mean, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, like, he got banged up in camp, that's a little scary. Hopefully it's not a big-time thing. And you mentioned Chychrun as well. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the Demers for Jamie McGinn trade, like, mm-hmm. John Chyka mm-hmm. just, like, knocked that one out of the park. So that was fantastic for them because they're getting that nice mix of veteran guys and they still have the young kids. So it's coming together nicely. And I wonder if Arizona is almost like a Carolina West where, last year with Carolina, we looked at their lineup. And it's like, man, things are coming together. They're not a playoff team. But,
nobody
kind of scrappy.
Nobody goes to their games. Hey-o!
They used to play somewhere else. But in all seriousness, like, I think when we look at Carolina now, we see a team that's like, oh, like, they could be kind of dangerous. And I think that's where Arizona is, where they're going to do the important work this year leading into next year. And that's when you're really going to see the talent take off.
It's interesting, in the office, I think most of us picked Clayton Keller to win the Calder. But you know whose name we have not mentioned? Dylan Strome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think? I mean, I admittedly, I'm of the camp that's getting a bit worried. I know he is. Yeah. He's working on his skating, and he's getting the same tutelage that John Tavares got. But I'm worried. I don't know.
I'm waiting for Jason Allison or John Tavares, or is he I don't know, pick some guy who can't skate.
Right.
I thought Jason Allison was the guy who couldn't skate.
Bad guy who can't skate.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe an enforcer? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a crucial year for Strome because there's obviously a lot of competition up top for a scoring role in Arizona, and he's not necessarily in the best position right now to get that role. But if he can play a good two-way game, then at least he can stick with the club. And, I mean, what I liked about him was watching him at the end of last year with the Erie Otters. You know, they go all the way to the Memorial Cup championship game. And he was strong. He played a strong game. And, you know, I know when they played St. John, he gave Thomas Chabot nightmares out there. And Thomas Chabot is one of the best young defensemen out there. He's going to be possibly a Calder candidate himself. So I think if Dylan Strome can do those little things where he can use the size, and I know he's not the strongest because he's still a young man, but if he can get himself a foothold in Arizona, I think it'll make all the world of difference because he'll have that confidence. He can learn from the guys around him. And, you know, maybe he gets that second line role eventually. It's also important to remember that the big kids, they take a little bit longer to get to the top. And if you look at like Joe Thornton's first year in the NHL, it was not good. Mm-hmm. Vincent LeCavalier, his first year in the NHL, was not good. But they
Joe
got
Thornton,
there.
Not good, yeah.
Yeah.
He just said Joe Thornton.
Oh, did you? I'm
I
sorry.
Did.
Okay.
That's
you
all right.
Said it one guy ago.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He went Joe Thornton, Vincent LeCavalier.
Sorry, I wasn't
Ken's
paying
like,
attention.
Joe Thornton.
Sorry. Maybe,
sorry,
maybe
wasn't
I said
paying attention.
Yeah. Sean
Key
Thornton.
LaFleur. His first year in the year wasn't in the league wasn't very good.
There you
Roger Richard had a crappy first year, too.
There you go.
There you go. There you go.
But anyways.
Bobby Orr had a really good first year, though.
Cool stories, bro.
Yeah.
At number five.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, we caught you, Ken. He's looking ahead. Number five in the division, we have a team that still dominant in possession, still dominant in Corsi, but out of the playoffs two of the last 3 years, it looks like their mini dynasty is dead. The LA Kings. And the counter argument, you know, we have them out of the playoffs. I talked to Drew Doughty at length about the prospects for this season in the summer. And one thing Doughty said was, listen, we have new coaching. John Stevens is going to let us freewheel a lot more. And we believe we can play fast. Because I asked him, do you think you guys are too slow? And he said, we can play fast. I don't know if I believe it, but that's sort of the counter argument. To me, I look at it as a team that they added Mike Camilleri, and if that's your top addition in the offseason, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So I don't think the Kings have done enough to change our perception of what they are based on what they were last year. I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, I mean, and this is a team that had a really, really difficult time producing offense last year. You know, didn't score much, didn't give up much. They were one of the best defensive teams in the league, but you know, this is a team that I look at, and as you say, I mean, yeah, sure, you can bring someone in who will let these guys freewheel, but if all they do is cycle in the corner and use their big bodies in the offensive zone and can't get around the ice, it doesn't matter if you unleash the horses because the horses can't run very fast. So, I see this as a team that is sort of facing that situation where the window's closed, and now they sort of have to decide what direction they're going to go in and what they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of structural problems with this team where, because they were good for so long, they didn't draft very high, and so their prospects tend to be of the sort of second-tier variety.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jonathan Quick, I mean, he needs to rebound, and he needs to be healthy, and I'm not, you know, he's not old, but he's got a lot of miles on him. You look at the top of their depth chart, and you know, Jeff Carter had a pretty good season last year on an obviously mediocre team, but not a young guy. Andre Kopitar, not really a young guy anymore, and not the fastest guy in the world. Dustin Brown, obviously he's been going through a lot of struggles. You know, they don't have the defensive depth they once did. And maybe a guy like Paul Ledoux comes in and really surprises people. I know he has some nice offensive capabilities to his game on the blue line. But it just feels like they're getting lost in this Pacific race where the Edmontons and the Calgarys are getting a lot better and the Kings are incrementally getting worse.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the Kings, they remind me a bit of Detroit in that they're in a tough spot where they kind of need to rebuild, but they've got so many bad and long-term contracts. They can't, they're untradeable. And the Kings are the victims of their own success. Dean Lombardi had to, I guess in his mind, it was, well, we just won our second Stanley Cup in 3 years. I have to give these, you know, extension to Marian Gaborik and big money for Dustin Brown and guys like that. And they're signed for so long and at such a high price that I don't know how you can trade those contracts. So as much as they might even want to blow it up, I don't think they can even do that. Like, they're kind of in a spot where they have to limp along, which is what we've seen Detroit doing the last few years. So I don't envy the Kings from a team structure position right now.
No, no. And Kopitar has to score more goals than what's on the back of his sweater.
Hey, I think he scored one more.
He won more. He had 12 last year. Yeah, I mean, he has to score a lot more. Okay? Trying to make a frickin' analogy.
I understand.
You're frickin' blowing
just
it
getting
for
technical.
Me.
Makes a
lot. Twice as many. Twice as many.
Yeah, twice as many would be
that's
really good.
A realistic
good.
Number.
Twice as many would be really good.
And it's funny. At number four in the Pacific, we have the San Jose Sharks. And to me, again, they entered the season very similarly to LA, although the Sharks were in the playoffs. But I look at their roster, and that's a team that really rested on its laurels. The teams above them are getting better, and Joe Thornton's coming off major knee surgery. The Sharks lost Patrick Marleau, and they brought in nothing in the offseason. So I just look at the team, and I say, how can we expect anything exciting from the Sharks this year when their core's getting old and they're not adding any bodies? And that's why we do have the Sharks. I think we have them ninth in the West right now because we do have, like you said, Ken, we have the five teams in the Central. So I don't know. To me, the Sharks, the window was 2016. They're going downhill.
Here's the thing about the teams that we've talked about to this point in this division. They're kind of like your friend says, hey, you should come to this party and meet this girl. She's really nice. And you guys would probably really hit it off. And then you get to the party and you go, yeah. You know what I mean? That's what all of these teams are.
Like the reputation's better than the result?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's where that's what I got. I'm going with that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Anyways, but like none of these teams that we've talked about, San Jose included in my opinion, like you don't sit there and get jacked about them. Like
they don't give you butterflies.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's not like, wow, I can't wait to see what those guys are going to do this year, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah, it's more like, I wonder what those guys are going to do this year.
Yeah,
I mean they certainly have high-end elements. Brent Burns is coming off a Norris Trophy, and you know, they still got Logan Couture and they still got Joe Pavelski and Joe Thornton still trucking. I think Martin Jones is a very good goaltender, but again, like LA, because they were so good for so long, they don't have a lot of high-end draft picks. And guys that we thought might fill those roles, like Thomas Hertl, who started off like gangbusters, are settling more into a middle six kind of role. They're good NHLers.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you're not going to get a Patrick Laine on the wing because of that. Maybe, you know, maybe Timo Meier turns out to be the answer, although, you know, he never had the high end of a Patrick Laine, for example. But they're really going to have to count on a guy like that to jump in. And I think they're still going to be decent because, you know, they've got Marc-Edouard Vlasic back there. They've got a pretty decent blue line. but they're going to have to count more on guys like Dylan DeMello or, you know, Joakim Ryan on the back end. They have to fill in some spots, and it's going to be up to some players to really step up because we haven't seen a big rush of really high-end prospects in San Jose.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. And it's funny, I think after San Jose in the Pacific, there's a huge gap.
Yep.
And it seemed, and even when we were hammering out our standings as a staff, the top three teams, each of those teams got votes for first place. And like you said, your party analogy, Ken, these are the people we get excited about in the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so we have number three Calgary, but I think Calgary has the upside to also be number one. They brought in Mike Smith, best puck-handling goalie in the NHL. I remember Johnny Gaudreau at the awards said it's going to be like 4-on-3 when they're 3-on-3 because Smith is that good with the puck.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We've seen, and there's a similarity to Nashville there because obviously Smith's got a great defense in front of him in Calgary, one of the best, if not the best in the West, or right up there with Nashville. And they've also added Travis Hamonic. So you've got that great defense core and a great puck-handling goalie, and we've seen how well that works in Nashville with Rene. And, you know, the Flames have two lines. They were a one-line team, but after last year, the Backlund Kachuk-Fralik line made them a two-line team. So they look pretty dangerous to me. I think I was the guy that actually had Calgary finishing first. I really liked them this year. Mm. What do you guys think?
I think they're where they should be. I think second or third. I think I think that in my mind, Edmonton's the team to beat in this division. And then you could either go Anaheim-Calgary or mm-hmm. Calgary-Anaheim, I would say. But we do know, you know, one thing. The Calgary's got to do it now, and they got to do it quick because they're going to be moving soon. right? Because, like, they're not going to get all that money for the rink, so they're gone. Yeah. So they're Seattle out of the Flames. NHL. Yeah. Maybe as early as, like, February. So they better get it done this year. They better get it done this year.
They don't want to become Colorado.
No. Yeah.
Winning in year one after the move.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. All jokes aside, I think this is a pretty solid team. I'm not, like, super sold on Mike Smith, but he's definitely... he's an upgrade on Brian Elliott, just because I think the upside is there. We've seen very good Mike Smith before, and you're right. He'll have a fantastic defense corps in front of him. Those top two lines are great. I think, you know, the key is going to be Sam Bennett, because if Sam Bennett can, you know, be that guy on the third line that promotes offense and really takes another step, then all of a sudden they become super dangerous. And, you know, looking at the third defense line, I think, you know, somebody's going to have to step up, or you're just going to have to minimize the minutes of a Brett Kulak, a Michael Stone, or whoever ends up in that pairing. So they're a bit of a top-heavy team for me, but, I mean, you can really run the Gaudreau line and the Tkachuk-Backlund line a lot, because they're all young guys, and you know you can put out Giordano and Hamilton and Brody and Hamonic a lot. So I think they're going to win a lot of games just based on the upper-end talent they have.
Is there a possibility Spencer Fu kind of makes his way up the ranks in this lineup? Because they're not, like, they don't have a lot of offense on the right side, right?
I think it's possible.
Is it possible that this guy, like, starts out as a fourth liner, then moves up, and then by the end of the year he's, like, on the top two lines and really producing for these guys?
I think it's possible, especially because we know Calgary needs a first-line right winger, and no disrespect to Michael Furland, but I think, you know, that's
right
a square peg, yeah. Well, I mean, Frolik's pretty good second-line right winger, but square peg in a round hole, Michael Furland. To me, that's why Jaromir Jagr, that's the great landing spot for him, to me. We know that because Jagr, he functioned well with two really skilled guys, with Barkov and Huberdeau, and who had wheels. Mm-hmm. So, to me, he's a perfect fit to play with Monahan and Gaudreau. I want to see it happen.
I don't think he can keep up with those guys.
Could he keep up with Barkov and Huberdeau? They're just as skilled and speedy, and I don't know.
I don't know if they're as fast as Gaudreau.
Probably not as fast, but they're still skilled.
I think Furland is the digger on that top line, and I know what you're saying. Like, if you could get a more skilled guy that can go retrieve pucks for the other two, then that's a better scenario for you. So it's a matter of finding that guy.
Yeah, if you're going to go Furland anyways, if you're going with a digger, then just use Jaromir Jagr as your digger.
He's a digger?
Oh, he's as strong on the puck as anyone in the league.
But you gotta get to the puck first. Yeah. You gotta get to the
someone
puck
can pass
to
it
out.
To him. Someone will pass it to him in the corner.
No, that's the problem. When you gotta go get the puck. Yeah.
That's the problem, because Johnny
Gaudreau, Matt. Yeah. You don't always have the puck.
Monahan can go get it. Yeah. Or Furlan can get it, and then he line changes.
And then he jumps up. Yeah.
Calgary Flames lead the league in too many men in the ice penalties once again.
Okay. So we have, it's funny, we have Edmonton as our cup finalist pick in the West, but we actually don't have them winning the division.
I don't know how that happened.
I don't know. It's just a feel. I think we just went with gut feel. But, I mean, I did the same.
I think it's because you don't have to win the division in the regular season to win the Stanley Cup. I think that might have been part of the
thing. Yeah, I think
thinking,
that's a thing that can happen.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's one of those things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, we've been very publicly bullish on the Oilers. They're on the cover of our season preview. Big story on McDavid and Draisaitl. And a lot of people, some people say, you know, are we sure they're not too top-heavy? And to me, and what I saw throughout the playoffs was they kind of showed that they're not a one-man team. It's not like McDavid set the world on fire. Yeah. A lot, especially Anaheim, they neutralized McDavid. We saw Draisaitl play really well. We saw the defense corps, Oscar Klefbom, stepped up. Oilers showed good size with Patrick Maroon and Cashin and Lucic. They're a more versatile team than they get credit for. So I don't know. Do you think this is the year they go all the way? Are they still another year away? Are we getting ahead of ourselves?
I think they can win a Stanley Cup this year. I think they can and should maybe win the Stanley Cup. Well, do you think Connor McDavid's gonna let that happen again in the playoffs? You think he's gonna let that happen again? You think he's gonna go 13 games and get 9 points this year in the playoffs?
No.
Not a chance. Not a chance. And I'll say it because I've said it before. You start with that guy, you give yourself a chance to win.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the best player in the world right now. You got the best player in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he is not going to let that happen again.
He hasn't even peaked yet.
Yeah. He's too good, and he's too smart, and he works too hard to let himself get collared in the playoffs again. Not going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, there is actually technically room for improvement with McDavid because he was not a great faceoff guy last year.
Yeah.
We know he's going to be better at that. I mean, the same thing with happened with Sidney Crosby. When I look at the Oilers, I see a team that has all the elements. Cam Talbot, that's your number one guy in net. Nobody played more than him last year, and he was very good when he was doing it. You've got a very nice defense. It might not have, like, a Norris Trophy guy, but Oscar Klefbom is really good. And when he's paired with Adam Larson, they're super effective. So you've got your good defense. And, then of course, with McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you have two of the most potent forwards in the NHL. So you're strong down the middle. You've got the defense. You've got the goaltender. It's just a matter of execution. And I agree, Matt. Like, I think they have some nice weapons that you throw in there. And you have some guys that are going to be pretty motivated, like a Ryan Strome, Jesse Puljujarvi. You know, these guys are going to have to battle for ice time. And I think it's one of those things where it kind of raises all ships where, you know, if those guys are battling, what does Drake Caggiula do? Well, he's going to battle as well, and that's going to help. Having that internal competition, I think, is very solid for them. And, yeah, I mean, there's nothing holding them back. They made their mini run to test the waters and see what it takes. And I think, you know, it was good playing the teams they did because both San Jose and Anaheim had great size and had veterans who have experience winning either championships or Olympic gold medals. So, like, they didn't play any patsies there, and now they can go out and say, like, we're ready. We've seen it. Now we want to do it.
It'll be interesting to see where this team, how this team evolves through the season and into the playoffs. Like, what's Milan Lucic's role going to be in the playoffs as opposed to what it is when the season starts, you know? Mm-hmm. Jesse Puljujarvi. You know, what's he going to do? Like, how's he going to handle this year? And is he going to be better? And is he going to, you know, show that last year was sort of the year where he figures it out and then he comes in this year and he's a lot better.
He could be
a
huge difference
maker. Enormous difference maker. You know, guys like that. It'll be interesting to see when they go into the playoffs how this team looks after the trade deadline, too.
True.
And because if they're going to be going for it, I'm sure there would be guys that would be interested in going there for a couple months to try and win a cup.
Yeah, definitely. So.
It's interesting, too, just thinking about McDavid and his fiery side. And I interviewed McDavid in the summer, and it was pretty neat. I almost, like, not that I got him mad, but I saw this flash of fire. And because I was telling him that we picked the Oilers to go to the final, and I was saying, you know, do you think it's your year? And he kind of, like, tensed up, and he said, why? I mean, and he said, we didn't win. And he sort of... like, you could see the anger of the loss. And I liked it. I was like, man, he's got some fire. Like, he didn't want to accept the idea that they would be anointed as the best team in the West. And it almost bothered him because he was like, no, we need to earn that. And it's like, this was in June, so it wasn't that, you know, it was a month after they'd been eliminated. And you could see still that stinging fire in him. So, I don't know. It was just a cool moment where I just saw that, like, almost Tom Brady-style anger in him, you know? So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Number one in the division, it seems like they're the safe pick, the Anaheim Ducks. They're always good in the regular season. They're very deep. They're very good defensively. They have a great goaltender. They've got a really deep, young, and still rising blue line. Although Hampus Lindholm and Sammy Vatanen both have shoulder troubles, so they're going to be starting the season late. But the Ducks are still deep even without them. So to me, are the Ducks, do you still see this team? I mean, we have them first, but do you view them as a team that can win the Stanley Cup? Or is it more, you know, they're good, we know they're going to be solid, they're going to get 100 points, and they're going to lose in the third round, second round. Where do you guys put them?
I think they're more the latter, because that's what they did, that's what they've done the last couple of years, and they are, with the exception of a backup goalie, exactly the same team as they've been.
Yeah.
So I don't know that this team is going to, as a year older and that sort of thing, is going to be able to will itself into that quote-unquote, like, serious contender category. I have my doubts. But they will be a really good regular season team because they've got a lot of talent and they've got a lot of experience and they know. But you know, you never know. Maybe this is a team that says, hey, you know, we're not going to kill ourselves in the regular season here, boys. We're going to get into the playoffs. We're going to get in the top three. And then we'll see what we're going to do. But, I don't see this team as it stands right now, being able to run, you know, with the really fast, chaotic teams that make it really difficult in games and you know, really push the pace.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where their weak spot is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like the window has almost closed on this particular Ducks group. I know Ryan Getzlaff had a fantastic season last year. I was surprised that he could continue that level given how many miles he has on his NHL career. And I always sort of ask, like, okay, well, then, like, when does it drop off? Is it this year or is it next year? It's kind of an unknown for me. Corey Perry, we've already seen the drop off. I don't know if you can get that back. And then they bring back Francois Beauchemin, which I found really curious. Like, unless they, you know, wanted him to retire as a Duck, I don't see how he can play a good role. And I know they have the injuries, but you've got Brandon Montour, who's already played games for you, and it is much more suited for the current game. He's more of a puck mover. I think he's got more of an upside in that regard. If you have to toss Jacob Larson in for some games at the beginning of the year while Lindholm and Vatanen get healthy, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, because, I mean, we've discussed this already. You don't have to win the division.
Right.
You'd rather be primed for the playoffs, and if you get Larson experience and have a well-rested Lindholm and Vatanen come springtime, doesn't that make more sense than to sort of, like, shove in Beauchemin one more time where, like, I mean, he wasn't good in Colorado. Why is he going to be good a year later back in Anaheim?
Yeah, it just seems like a Band-Aid sort of stopgap, and he can retire a Duck, I guess, if it doesn't go well.
That's a depth move. Like, that's depth, though, really. Like, if it gets to the point where they're leaning on him, then it's probably trouble, but I mean, is he even in their top six right now? Like,
well, I mean, we have him listed as their second best left defenseman.
To fill the injury void. But
yeah,
to me, the Ducks, they're a weird team in that their blue line, so John Gibson in net and all the young defensemen, that team is ready to win for a long time, but their forwards are aging. And, like, you know, Ryan Kessler's, he's literally coming back from hip surgery.
Yeah.
Like the stereotypical old person injury. And they're sort of forced to wait for guys like Sam Steele to be ready to step in as major offensive performers. So they're sort of stuck in a tweener zone. So I don't know what to make of the Ducks. I think it kind of limits their ceiling. So I agree. I think they're going to be good, but I think it's going to be more of the same.
I think you have them pegged really well, a tweener. But they're an upper.
An upper tweener.
Yeah. They're an upper tweener. Yeah.
And it's actually funny what you mentioned. I think that their window could reopen again in 2 years when Sam Steele is, let's just say, in his sophomore season and becoming that really great top six threat where Getzlaff doesn't have to be the man anymore. And you've got the Raquels and the Silverbergs that are still around, and they're veterans now, but you have Steele coming in, and he can give you that high-end offense, then maybe the window kind of reopens because the Fowlers and the Mansons and the Vatanens and all those guys are still in their prime, and so is John Gibson.
Absolutely. And you could see Getzlaff could sort of become the later career Joe Thornton, where he's sort of a two-way guy, right?
Yeah.
The grizzled vet. Okay, everybody, thanks a lot for listening. It's going to be really exciting to see how the Pacific shakes out, and that concludes all of our divisional previews. Next week, we're just going to start talking regular hockey. We'll see what happens. Thanks.